Welcome to Your True North, a program that explores how values act as a compass, directing our lives and work. Inspiring guests tell how key events and influential figures shaped their values and how they've used those values to create a life rich in meaning, accomplishments, and personal satisfaction. Your True North is hosted by Cindy Camp. Are you seeking your true north? Then welcome.
Welcome to Your True North. I'm your host, Cindy Camp. Your True North is a program that explores values as a compass for life's journey. Today, I will be talking with Father Denny Kinderman and Sister Donna Liette. They are both members of the Precious Blood Order of the Catholic Church. For many years, Father Denny worked in a low-income urban parish in Cincinnati before moving to Chicago in 2001. He is the co-founder of the Precious Blood Ministry for Reconciliation, a restorative justice program in the Back of the Yards neighborhood, where he works with young people who've been involved with the juvenile justice system in Chicago. Sister Donna spent most of her career at Mercy Manor in Dayton, Ohio, a residential home for women recently released from prison. For the past 4 years, she has been working at Precious Blood, where she works closely with the mothers of young people who are incarcerated or who have lost their lives to violence. A centerpiece of Sister Donna and Father Denny's work is the use of peace circles to help those affected by crime talk about their experiences. Welcome to Your True North, Father Denny and Sister Donna. Father Denny, I'd like to start with you. If you could tell us just a little bit about where you grew up.
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. That's about an hour north of Cincinnati, Ohio. And it was in an all-white, lower middle-class neighborhood. We grew up feeling very safe in our neighborhood. That was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Went to Catholic school, so just raised in a very safe environment. So the work that I moved into was just like a totally different world. I had a wonderful family, brother and two sisters, mom and dad at home. You know, always felt like I had a place where I was welcome and grew up with a good self-image.
And Sister Donna, what about you? Where did you grow up?
I had a similar background. I was born actually in North Star, Ohio, and it was a little farm community. And as Father Denny said, you know, I felt very safe. We never locked doors. We lived on a big farm. And, you know, I just was well taken care of, both parents, two sisters, and just had a very happy childhood.
And what about key formative events in your childhood, Father Denny? Does anything stand out as perhaps an event that really made you who you became as an adult?
Yeah, besides my mother and father and growing up with family, I love family. My mother came from, you know, she had 12 brothers and sisters, and family would get together at Christmas and reunions, and I think all of that was very formative for me to. And I had a neighbor, a kid that was like 2 years older than myself, who was blind. And as I think back, I think that was very formative for me because I learned compassion in a way in which, you know, you don't feel sorry for someone so much as it's just the reality you live with and you deal with. And I think it kind of opened my eyes at a young age already to be open to other people's situations.
Very interesting. Sister Donna, what about you? Key formative events or people who really affected you as a child?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and I think that was very significant in my growing up as loving nature, loving growth, the soil, the earth. And my father loved the earth. He was a wonderful farmer. And probably one of the interesting events for me was walking back to, we had big woods in the back of our farm. And after Daddy had worked, you know, milked the cows and all those things, you know, he would take me and walk. We'd walk hand in hand down to the woods and just sit there and listen to the wind blow through the trees and the birds and singing. And that was just a wonderful memory that I have of my dad. And also, you know, I really began to, we lived on a main highway, you know, in those days. You know, we didn't have I-75 and those, but on Route 127, and what we used to call then were the bums that would walk, you know, on the road there. And so as a little girl, when I was like five, I'd go out and say, hey, my mommy just baked some pies. Yeah. Would you like to have one?
Wow.
And just bring them into the house. I did that only once. Mm-hmm. And mother said that wasn't a really good idea. But she would always fix little bags of sandwiches and food for them to give out. And I just really, that really hurt me to see people who were scared and hungry and poor. And yeah. So that was very formative, I think, in my life.
Well, I'd like to ask you now a little bit about your values and how you've lived according to a set of values. Father Denny, can you tell us about some of your sort of the core values that you really live by?
I think truth stands out as probably basic. And I like simplicity. I don't like things to be complicated. I like listening. I think listening is terribly important, especially in the kind of work we do today with youth who often feel that they don't have a voice and no one pays any attention to them. And I think when I think of values, I think, you know, it's almost becomes part of your DNA in a way. You know, it's like my parents raised me with always, you know, tell the truth. They said, you know, if you're going to drink or smoke before, you know, just do it in front of us because, you know, don't hide anything. It's just once you grow up in that kind with those kind of values, I think they kind of take over in a way so that as you live your life, you begin to reflect that. And also the values kind of give you, you know, little red flags will go up if you kind of know within yourself that like, oh, wait a minute, that's not as truthful as I could be or whatever, you know. And of course, then as we got into doing circles, we'll talk more about that later, but the peacemaking circles are based on those kind of values where you speak honestly, you really listen to whoever's talking, and you hold in confidence what's being shared. Those kind of things I think are important, especially in this day and age where everything is becomes public. You know, I think confidentiality still has its place, has a value.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Sister Donna, when you think about values and the ones that you really hold at the center of your life, what comes to mind?
I think probably the first thing that comes to mind actually is family. I really value family and friendships. And but I think also the gospel values, sort of the values of Jesus, you know, that he really valued each person and saw the dignity that should be each person's, that we should respect each person. Respect is really an important thing. And really to respect each other's stories, that even though we have differences, to really respect that in each other. So, and I think also just the people who are marginalized and the outcast, you know, as Jesus did, really valued those persons. And so and another really important value for me is integrity, to being truthful, as Father Denny said, you know, to others and about my own life, to being really authentic and full of integrity.
Well, thank you. I'd like to ask you to talk about the work that you do, which is fascinating work. You're down at in the Back of the Yards neighborhood, a neighborhood with plenty of crime, a lot of challenges for the people who live there. And you have worked in a program there that really helps young men and sometimes young women find a better path in life. And you mentioned peace circles. So maybe Sister Donna, would you and then Father Denny each comment about the kind of work that you're currently doing there?
Well, really, I do work with our youth who are really not safe in a very violent neighborhood. So we try to provide safety for them. But I think probably more important what I do right now is working with the mothers of those children. They really have tremendous struggles. So right now we have a circle for those mothers monthly who come together. And we just honor them because many of them have children incarcerated. And so they feel a lot of sometimes shame or feeling that they're not the mothers that they should be or could be. And so just to give them that support and that time to be honored really with a nice brunch and then a circle where they come together and share their struggles, where they share what they need and how we can pray together and how we can comfort each other and be with each other. Some of the mothers have lost children to violence. Others have lost their children to incarceration. And so they come together and tell their stories and support one another and offer each other love. And so I think that's a really powerful thing that can make a difference in these families. And then that also affects their children.
And Father Denny?
We start off with the kids that have been had contact with the juvenile justice system. So we actually go into the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center several times a week and sit and talk one-on-one with the kids. Recently, we've been sitting talking one-on-one with our own kids that we work with at our center who end up back in the detention center. We even do circles in the detention center. In a circle, the kids actually sit in a circle. That way they know that they are everyone's equal. No one comes there in a particular role, even myself. We're sitting together as human beings, mm-hmm. and we speak our own truth. We listen to one another. One person at a time speaks as a talking piece is passed around, and the kids will allow themselves to become very vulnerable. On the streets, or even while they're locked up, they're always, you don't have to be tough. You have to be watching your back. But in a circle, it's sort of like everyone knows that, hey, our stories are the same, you know, and so they really open up. So that's a real value. In addition to that, at the center, a lot of kids get suspended from school. We try to work with them. Kids coming out of detention maybe need to be placed in a school. They'll need a part-time job. They all come there hungry. We mm-hmm. have food available. We try as best we can to get someone to mentor each kid. We have tutoring. And it's not just that we offer programs. It's almost like as soon as an individual walks through the door, it's like, what does that individual need? And that's what we try to provide. So it's a constant opportunity for us to really minister to kids. You know, as I was speaking earlier about my values and how they came through family and my parents and so forth, and lived in an all-white, safe neighborhood. The more I thought about it, the more I thought kids we work with at our center have none of that, you know? Most of the boys come from fatherless families, and the mothers are struggling, trying to make it. And as Donna said, the circles she has with the mothers are really wonderful for the mothers to come together to support one another.
Would you say a little bit more about the circle itself? I know I've heard you talk about it before, and you referred to the First Nation tradition of, I think, finding solutions to problems and communities within the community itself. Mm-hmm. Could you say a little bit more about how you use the circle itself?
Actually, if you go far back in any of our cultures, you'll probably find out that early on, our ancestors sat in circle to resolve problems. The fact that there are going to be tensions in society or among people, problems, is just part of being human. How we resolve those differences is what the circle helps. In a circle, you don't have one group win, one group lose. You know, if you have opposition coming together in the circle, you keep talking through until after listening to one another's stories, you're ready to say, okay, we can live with this as a common solution. The story we like to tell, I'll let Sister Donna tell a story about the policeman and the kid. Why don't you go ahead and tell her?
Okay, I can tell a brief story about a police officer's home had been broken into by four youth. And so one of the young men chose, you know, meeting with the juvenile judge to come to Precious Blood Center and sit in circle with his victim. And so we talked with the police officer, and he said, oh, you know, I'd be interested in doing that. And so we talked to the young man and his mother, and he said, yes, that's what he wanted to do. Now, there were probably two choices of either being locked up or sitting in a restorative justice circle, a reconciliation circle. And so we came together one day and sat in circle, and we began with a poem about how are our children. You know, we kind of open with this ritual. And then we asked the police officer to tell what was the harm that was done. And he began to tell how much harm had been done with computers and windows, and his home now was locked up, boarded up in a nice neighborhood. It was a shameful thing, and how his son now was very fearful and of being at that home. And so he told all the harm that had been done. And then the young man, Father Kelly, asked him, well, tell us how it was for you. So he told how he had been sort of bullied at school to get into some of these situations. And he had always said no, but this time he made the choice to join the group who was going to do the harm. And he was very remorseful and felt so bad about what he had done, as well as his mother. And so the circle went on for about an hour and a half, and, you know, a lot of it is confidential. But in the end, what was so powerful is I think the police officer began to see that he also had been fatherless, you know, and had grown up. And now he was not protecting his son, perhaps, and he felt a lot of shame about that himself, or hurt, I believe. Not maybe so much shame. And so the young boy, at the end, what do you need, was the last question. And the police officer got up and went to the boy and said, if you ever need a coach, I'm also a coach, or play basketball, I'm there for you. Here's my phone number. But one thing you must do is go to school. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a real reconciliation. Within an hour and a half, the police officer began to understand this young boy. And I think what's so significant about that, and what Circle does, is I think this police officer, had he not had this experience, I don't know how he would have treated the next boy that he had to arrest. And I also think if the young boy had just been locked up, what would have happened to him differently? But when they came together and understood each other's story, and actually the police officer who had been the victim got up and said, here's my phone number, because the young boy had expressed that he wished he had a dad, that we'd maybe play basketball with him sometime or look at his grades. And the police officer, the victim, got over and said, here, I'll do that for you.
Yeah, that the role of listening, mm-hmm. and the role of getting to speak one's piece, tell one's story,
right.
as well as compassion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, to put yourself in someone else's shoes, it sounds like there's such a key role for the Peace Circle to do those things.
Mm-hmm. It's not unusual when we have a circle and someone sits in circle for the first time, they'll end up at the end saying, oh, I'm going to go home and gather my family together. We're going to have a circle. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they see the way it kind of breaks down the barriers and breaks down the false kind of shields we protect ourselves. That we take off our masks and we're just who we are.
Right.
And when we can do that. Yeah. And what helps, as Sister Donna mentioned, there are certain rituals sometimes that help. Sometimes it's a fun kind of thing you do at first. That mm-hmm. way everybody who's there is laughing together first, and then they're more ready to, it kind of breaks the ice. So in a circle, everyone wins. Because if you don't leave the circle, everybody agreeing, at least everybody is agreeing that they can live with what was finally resolved.
Yeah.
So a circle is not like a courtroom where you have, well, no comparison between a circle and a courtroom, because in a courtroom you just have people talking about someone who doesn't even get a chance to speak.
Right. Yeah, well, and I guess the idea, too, of trying to find some understanding between people, even if it's hard to find a lot of agreement, but now at least you understand what someone else was thinking or experiencing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know the other piece, and you mentioned this, of the work that you do is really the sort of concrete things to help these young people find their path, whether it's the GED or getting their license or looking for work. Would you say a little bit more about those kinds of things? I know you have an art program down at Precious Blood. So any of those other things that go on, we'd love to hear about.
Well, I think one of the things that I found interesting when I first came to Precious Blood Center was the Project Repay, where the youth would be asked to come to Precious Blood Center and do some kind of service. So they could paint, or they could clean, or they could do whatever. And then they got paid for that. And then that went to their victim, though. You know, so it's a Project Repay. So they were painting and restoring furniture and doing talking pieces and getting building community and getting connected to our center also. So they started to feel a belonging to something bigger than themselves, mm-hmm. something more than the streets. And then they were also doing something beautiful. And then, you know, we could give it out. We couldn't sell it, but we could give it out to someone. But the money then went to their victim. So I thought that was a wonderful project that really did a lot for the youth instead of just locking them up.
Right.
The arts are a way of sort of reaching deeper within a place where you don't always go and having a chance to express it. So if it's painting, or there was one young man who he was such a troublemaker. Whenever you'd see him coming, it's like, oh, no, he's here again. But and he was always active, you know, had to touch everything, always be doing something. But when he was painting, the artist at the time had the kids doing self-portraits. And when he was painting, he would just paint real slow. He was very calm. It's sort of like that touched something deeper in him that he had never been in touch with before. And so that's what we try to do. We call it restorative justice. It's not punitive. It's not just to punish the kid. It's to take the kid and try to let that kid see something about himself or herself that they just haven't been in touch with. And we even take kids sometimes, you know, bowling or to Dave and Buster's, you know, an opportunity for them to just be in a place where sometimes they wouldn't feel safe if we weren't there with them or they weren't together in a group, and to just enjoy themselves and sort of relax and just be kids for a while. You know, it's our neighborhoods are just so, everybody's just kind of tense all the time. And it's just, even when they come to the center sometime, some of the kids will call it like their second home. They just feel, you know, that here's a place where I don't have to be on guard. I can just be myself, you know.
Yeah, that's
one of the nice experiences, though, was coming here, you know, because our boys still just talk about that so much and working here in the radio station.
Yeah, and, I should say a word about that. So here at St. Xavier, we hosted a group from Precious Blood earlier this year for a college visit day. And they did get to visit the radio station and walk around the campus and play basketball in our gym. And, yeah, I think that was a great experience. Mm-hmm. So thanks for mentioning that.
Yes,
yeah, we really
so.
Enjoyed as well and got the chance to learn a little bit more about them and their experience in their world and also having them here for the day. Mm-hmm. So,
and it gave them an idea that maybe they could have a future. Maybe they could go to college, because many of our boys, not too long ago, I was working out in the yard and one of the boys just stopped and said, I'm 24 today. I never thought I would live to be 24.
Wow.
You know, they don't really expect to either be they expect to either be incarcerated or deceased.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to think about a future when you're just struggling for today, you know. Mm-hmm. And we don't always think of it that way, but our kids do.
Yeah. Well, and they know people who've died at a young age, many,
who've
been injured, shot. So, yeah. I'm also thinking about, I know you have a poetry writing program, and I think that is really targeted to young men who are serving time in prison, but get to contribute poetry to a monthly newsletter, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that that's also tremendously beneficial for them. As you said, the arts can touch such a deep place inside of us.
Not only that, it gives those who are incarcerated a voice. And they'll write these poems or they'll do drawings. They send them to us, and then we publish them. And we mail them out to all the facilities in Illinois, the adult facilities too. So it's a mix of adult and youth publications. Just last night, I was talking to a young man who in the detention center. He said, Father Denny, I want to read this poem to you. And he read a poem that was written by a kid that had been in juvenile detention, who's now in the Department of Corrections doing time. And he read it with such almost like a relief that someone could say what was really burdening him and say it so well. He said, that's my story.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that happens with these poems.
Right. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing so many details about the work that you do. It's so interesting.
I'd like to add one thing
about
Circle. It's becoming more and more a practice, like in schools, to resolve issues and so forth. And so we have Circle training at the center every month. And, you know, a lot of people have been trained in how to do circles. So if anyone out there hasn't heard much about it, you might want to look into it more because, like I say, it is becoming more and more a very useful, practical kind of practice.
And would you say the name of the organization that does the training? Institute?
What are they called? The Community Youth for Justice.
Community.
They use our facility for doing the training.
I think they've trained, haven't they trained some of the counselors in the Chicago Public School System? And
yes.
I think they're using this at Fenger High School, among other places.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so it does have a tremendous potential to help
our
youth.
Even get a training for those who work in the juvenile detention center.
This is part one of a two-part show. Join us again next week to hear the conclusion of our conversation.
You've been listening to Your True North with Cindy Camp. The opinions expressed on today's episode are not necessarily those of WXAV 88.3 FM, St. Xavier University, or the producers of Your True North. For a copy of today's program, you can download it as a podcast by visiting yourtruenorthpodcasts.com. Thank you very much for listening to Your True North.